Well, good morning. Good morning to those of you who are watching online, and good morning to those of you here. Thank you so much for your welcome, and thank you, Rachel, for praying. Just so that you know where I'm headed this morning, first I'm going to share an update on the project, Bread of Life. Then I'm going to read some scripture, and thirdly, I'll lead us in some thoughts on that. I'm planning, hoping to do all that in about half an hour, so don't panic. So let me tell you about the project. So, we've got some first slide up there, that's great. In April 2020, in fact, on April the 1st, 2020, which was a kind of significant date I should have taken note of, I was appointed by SEBA, the Southeastern Baptist Association, to be a pioneering minister, and I had the specific brief of setting up this project called Bread of Life. In the first instance, that means converting a building formerly used by Strood Evangelical Church. I think we've got a picture of that to show you. There we are. That's how it looks inside at the moment. You can see that there's a fair bit of work that needs doing. This building was used by Strood Evangelical Church, which sadly closed 2 or 3 years ago. My job is to transform it into a nice coffee shop and a micro bakery. Amongst the coffee shop and micro bakery are up and running, the end goal is to see a new worshiping community established there. If you're wondering what a micro bakery is, I think we've got some picture of some bread. There we are. Just get the idea. I'm sure you'd get there pretty quickly. A micro bakery is not unlike a micro brewery, only with bread rather than beer. It's a model that is used by many commercial artisan bakers. The plan is that one day a week I will bake, I don't know, up to 100 loaves of bread. Not your sliced white loaves, you understand, but things like stout and oat sourdough, or red pepper and onion ciabatta, some fancy artisan bread. That will be advertised online and baked to order, so there's less waste, and hopefully the bakery will be more economic. And the idea is that I won't have to get up at the crack of dawn, but we'll bake during the day, and customers will pop into the shop in the evening to collect their freshly baked orders. So it might be commuters on their way home from work, driving home from the station, and so on. And the micro bakery will also provide baked goods and pastries and so on for the coffee shop. The plan for the coffee shop, there we are, there's coffee shop that I used to do a bit of work in. The coffee shop, the plan is to provide a pleasant environment that people will want to stay in, and as well as freshly produced pastries, cakes and so on, providing the usual things, barista coffee, a range of leaf teas and so on. The ethos is for, even in the coffee shop, for Jesus to be central. Central, but not necessarily overt in the sense that it won't say Bread of Life Church over the door. Sadly, that church word can put so many people off these days. And yet with the name Bread of Life, if people were to ask about that, it gives opportunity to speak about Jesus, the Bread of Life. The idea is that everything will be done for the glory of God, whether it's making the very best croissant that I can produce, or treating customers to pleasant, relaxing experience, being aware of opportunities to listen to people, to build relationship, to pray with them. Sadly, many people these days are highly unlikely to walk into a traditional church building. Latest figures suggest that 95% of our population would not consider themselves to be churchgoers. Bread of Life is intended to be a place for that 95%. It's likely that support groups will emerge within the coffee shop environment, whether that's for mental well-being, job clubs, parents on the school run, or whatever. Which groups develop will depend very much on who walks through the door. I will be doing things like running the Bread of Life course, which is something that I've written, which teaches bread-making skills over a series of 6 sessions. And I just open up conversations about Jesus, the Bread of Life, as we're baking, as we're proving, as we're putting crosses on hot cross buns. There's so many opportunities to speak about faith. This will be integral mission. The plan is that it will be self-sustaining after a significant initial investment, that the income from the coffee shop and from the bakery will pay my stipend, that there'll be no need for congregational giving or home mission to support the ministry. And the idea is very much not that the bakery will provide my income and then I'll do church in my spare time. As I sell a loaf of bread or make a croissant, I'll be doing it as a follower of Jesus, as part of my ministry. And I think the other thing to say is that this will be more than an evangelistic project providing new Christians to join existing congregations down the road. This will be church, by which I mean that when people come to faith, they will stay at Bread of Life and be discipled, grow closer to Christ there. That might be through serving as a volunteer. It might be sharing their newfound faith with others in the coffee shop. It might be sharing in a Bible study or sharing bread of wine around a table. But it's unlikely to be at 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning singing songs. Well, we started off the service talking about Advent and times of waiting. I've been in a time of waiting for 20 months or so. When I was first appointed, it was hoped that all the building work would be completed and I'd be able to move straight in. The building work hasn't yet begun. That's not to say that nothing has happened. There's been significant progress, fundraising through grants and donations, but the main thing, the building work, has not been able to begin. And the reason for that is a very complex reason that I won't tell you about because it would take the rest of the day. But it's basically to do with trust deeds and ownership of the building. I'm pleased to say that recently the SEBA trustees have taken a step of faith and given approval for the building contract to be finalised, in faith that things are now headed in the right direction. The one thing that's still outstanding is a final go-ahead from the Baptist Union Corporation, part of the Baptist family, so hopefully that will happen. Please pray, join me in praying for confirmation of that soon. But you know, this waiting time has been a time of not just teaching me patience, but lots of positive things have happened. I'm sure that when I do begin and open the doors of the coffee shop, we'll be in a far stronger position because of it. I've certainly been busy over these last 20 months. Part of that has been supporting other churches. I spent a year as the interim minister of Strood Gospel Mission Church. I got them well established with their own minister in training. I'm now interim minister at Borstal Baptist Church, helping them to become more missional and more engaged with their local community. And when I'm at a loose end, I'm also moderating for Sittingbourne Baptist Church, so doing lots of that sort of stuff. But as well as supporting other churches, I've been learning how to do Bread of Life without a building, something that a lot of churches have had to do during the pandemic. So I've been doing online Bread of Life courses, and now that restrictions are lifting. I've been able to do them in person, so I'll be doing the last session of an in-person Bread of Life course this afternoon. I've also been doing pop-up market stalls where I've been selling baking that I've been doing in a church kitchen elsewhere, setting up a stall outside the premises of Bread of Life in Darnley Road, with the prime purpose of beginning to establish relationship with the locals, with the community there. And I'm pleased to say there's certainly a lot of enthusiasm for the coffee shop to open. It's early days, but already I've had a couple of deeper conversations just being out there on the street. And another exciting thing that's happened just recently is a local primary school have asked me to write a children's cookery course, which I'm currently delivering. We had a lot of mayhem yesterday with seven-year-olds making their own lasagnas, chopping up onions with their sharp knives, and we didn't lose any fingers, which was good. Well, I couldn't talk to you about baking this morning, I didn't feel I could, without bringing some along, which is why there's this table at the front that Rachel referred to earlier. Not yet, don't rush, but at the end, as you leave, the idea is that you can pick up a bag on the left-hand side as I'm standing, so your right. There are some mincemeat pinwheels, so it's a Danish pastry base with some mincemeat that I've made on the top. And on this side, there are some cinnamon buns. So you're all very welcome to take one. I think there should be enough, at least for one each of those here in the building. As Rachel suggested, maybe one or two for those who are not here this morning. So do make sure that they all go here, because if I take them home to my wife, I'll be in trouble again for just making her the size of a house, and that won't go down well. Well, that was just a quick whistle stop tour of Bread of Life and what I'm doing at the moment. I hope it gives you more of an idea. I'm really excited. I hope you gather that by this opportunity. What you will have picked up is that both the project itself, Bread of Life, and the course that I've written take their name from some words of Jesus, words from John chapter 6. So I'm going to read that passage to you now. So this is John chapter 6, and beginning at verse 25. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Jesus answered, "Very truly I tell you, you're looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him God the Father has placed his seal of approval." Then they asked him, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one he sent." So they asked him, "What sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it's not Moses who's given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." "Sir," they said, "always give us this bread." Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Well, I am passionate about bread. Once you start me talking about something like the development of gluten or the dreadful imitations of bread that are often sold in our supermarkets, you need to be prepared for a long conversation. So I am very excited to be given the opportunity to make baking a bigger part of my life through this Bread of Life project. During the first session of a Bread of Life course, I ask participants what they think Jesus meant by those words, "I am the bread of life." And you know, to be honest, it's quite a difficult question. Most people realize what he didn't mean. He wasn't saying, "I am a loaf of bread," any more than John F. Kennedy might have been saying, "I'm a hot dog," if that's what his famous words in that speech in Berlin might have actually meant. So let me ask you, time for a little bit of interaction, at least with those here this morning. How would you summarize it? What do you think Jesus meant when he said, "I am the bread of life"? I'm brave enough to shout out? Otherwise, I'll have to pick on Rachel, because she should know. All you need. Okay, so a provider. Yeah? Nourishment. Thank you, yes. So bread, hopefully good bread, nourishes. And talking about nourishing. What was that? Life. Well, certainly he adds that, doesn't he? I'm the bread of life. So, well, spot on, you're right. Essential. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're doing well. There's some good suggestions there. I say, often the people that I'm doing this course with haven't got the advantage that I suspect many of you have of a bit of a church background, a bit of Bible knowledge. But nevertheless, usually the conversation about Jesus does end up recognizing that in some sense he was claiming to be nourishing, satisfying, sustaining. Those sorts of words. And as my helpful contributor said, certainly he wasn't just claiming to be bread, but saying, "I am the bread of life." In many, many ancient cultures, bread was the staple. Yes, it was true that if you were rich, you would have greater opportunity to vary your diet. Whether that meant eating meat when a calf was slaughtered, or lovely array of fruit after the harvest. And yet for the majority of the population, on most days, what filled you up was the carbohydrate in bread. And so no bread meant death. And what held materially with bread is the same spiritually with Jesus. He is the bread of life. No bread means spiritual death. No bread of life means spiritual death. You see, life doesn't come from keeping our noses clean. Neither does it come from being part of the right church family. Life doesn't spring from serving in the Sunday school for years on end. Don't misunderstand me. All those things can be good and helpful. They may provide opportunities to receive spiritual bread. But in and of themselves, they don't lead to life. Jesus is the bread of life. Let me just ask you another question. Do you know when Jesus said these words? Can you tell me what happened just before the passage that I read to you just now? Absolutely, the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus had crossed the lake in a fairly spectacular fashion in between, but the significant thing is the feeding of the 5,000. The people who came to Jesus after that event, after that miracle, didn't comprehend that Jesus is the bread of life. They were after more free bread. or at least more entertainment from miracles. They missed the fact that it wasn't the wonderful signs that he performed, but Jesus himself who is the source of life. They needed to look beyond the miracle of the loaves, to the one who worked the miracles. Jesus is the bread of life. And Jesus offers himself to all. Effectively, Jesus says, if you want this bread, it's free. It's there for the taking. All you've got to do is come to me, to believe in me. I think one of the first things that anyone learns about bread is that it's no good simply left on the side. It doesn't keep me alive when it's sat in the bread bin. After a short while, it will go stale and mouldy. Particularly homemade bread or ancient loaves, for that matter, that are not pumped full of all the preservatives that modern bread factories pump into them. Bread is not intended to be admired from a distance. It's intended to be eaten. You need to tear off a chunk, cover it in butter or whatever else you prefer, and eat it. Jesus is not intended to be admired from afar. He is like bread. We need to partake of him. And of course, that's not literally taking a bite out of Jesus. But it is much more than simply hearing his name or seeing at a distance what he's done for others. We have to come to him and believe in him for ourselves. And that is largely a matter of trust. Trusting that Jesus really is the Son of God. Trusting his words, trusting him with our lives. And that's exactly what Jesus was encouraging his followers to do through the line in the Lord's Prayer that says, give us this day our daily bread. One of the breads that has seen a huge increase in popularity over this recent period of lockdown is sourdough. Some of you come across sourdough bread, do you buy it? One or two hands going up, that's good. Well, sourdough bread is very simple. You only need two ingredients to make it, flour and water. And since those two ingredients were available centuries ago, this is a very traditional method of making bread. Excuse me. To have a sip of the water, excuse me. Right. Hopefully I'm back. Yeah, sourdough, I was saying, is a very simple bread because it has these two ingredients, flour and water. It's a very traditional method of making bread. Indeed, it was used in Jesus' day. But although sourdough only has those two ingredients, flour and water, it's not a flat bread. Do any of you, perhaps those of you who have bought sourdough, know what the raising agent is? Any ideas? Well done. Spot on. Wild yeast. So the answer is yeast, but wild yeast, not yeast that's added as an ingredient, so much as captured. You see, there are yeast spores all around us in the air, and certainly on most grains of wheat. And if you allow a mixture of flour and water to go off under the right conditions, rather than multiplying mold spores, you can multiply yeast spores. Having done that and established your active yeast-rich gloop, you're ready to make some bread. And you do this by dividing your starter, as it's called, into two. You use half to make some bread, And the other half you replenish with more flour and water, providing more proteins for the yeast to feed on. My next question is this: by God's grace, how long do you think it takes at ambient temperature for the yeast, the wild yeast, to reproduce sufficiently to make your next loaf of bread? Do you think 3 seconds, 50,000 years? How long do you think it takes for wild yeast to reproduce enough to make another loaf of bread? You're absolutely right. Does anyone want to be a bit more specific, precise? A week, 1 hour, a few hours? Well, the answer is 24 hours, 1 day. And so in ancient times, you made your loaf of bread in the morning, fed your flour and water mixture, and had to trust that this grey gloop would be ready to make some delicious bread the following day. And you know, it required trust. I actually thought it was magic back then. But just like manna in the desert, if a family was greedy and used all their starter, they'd have none left for the following day. If they decided not to risk some of their precious flour feeding the starter, it would die off. They couldn't hurry it, but if they trusted enough to wait patiently, they would have a wonderful resource the next day for their bread making. That's what Jesus was referring to when he encouraged his disciples to pray, "Give us this day our daily bread." Followers of Jesus have always had to trust God to provide for their needs, material, social, spiritual, to provide for those needs 1 day at a time. Perhaps for all the very real difficulties and suffering brought about by coronavirus, the pandemic has at least helped us to look beyond ourselves, beyond human help. Maybe we're discovering once more that we do really need to rely on God for life. Followers of Jesus don't trust in their savings, that you know, what we've got stashed away in the bank will last for 12 months, whatever happens. Banks can fail. Neither is discipleship about trusting in my own ability to hold down a good job or whatever. Because whatever I can do today, whatever earning potential I have for the future, it can all be swept away by things that are totally beyond my control. If the outbreak of coronavirus has shown us anything, it's that things can change in ways that none of us would have expected just a couple of years ago. But in a changing and volatile world, God is faithful. The one who created the world is unchanging, and he is gracious. He created it with the attention to detail that resulted in yeast spores reproducing in 24 hours at ambient temperature. He invites us to come to him, to listen to him, to believe in him, so that when he says, "Your sins are forgiven," you believe it. You are forgiven and can live totally free of guilt. Or when he says, "You are a precious child of God," you believe it. That is who you are. You can hold up your head and live like it. This is not pie in the sky. It's not fake news. Jesus is true to his every word. Jesus is the one who sustains and satisfies, who nourishes, who gives life. He is the bread of life.